Man, it's a treat to be here. There's something just really lovely here amongst you and this good thing that's happening and Chris and Nikki and you guys and this place in the world. Thanks so much for letting me be here with you. I'm going to start today off with a joke. Supposedly, this joke came from Mark Twain. And this is how it goes. So there once was a scientist. And the scientist wanted to have this experiment where she was going to put different creatures into a cage and see how they got along. And so first she got a dog and a cat, and she put them in the cage, and at first they sort of sized each other up, and they sniffed each other, and then eventually they snuggled a little bit. And the scientist wrote this down. She took them out of the cage, but she put a pig and a goat inside. And the pig and the goat circled around each other, they eyed each other a little bit, but then eventually they took a nap together. It was so sweet. So she took the pig and the goat out, and she put in a Presbyterian and a Catholic and a Baptist. And after just 1 hour, she went back to the cage, and she looked, and nothing was left alive. I'm not so good at telling jokes. But the point is, it's kind of funny, because we know that ugly truth is kind of true in our lives, that we see this unfortunate history of some spiciness and criticism and separation and even splitting amongst churches and denominations that don't like each other and are kind of against each other. I mean, all the way to the Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland, or even the Puritans who arrived on the Mayflower escaping the Church of England. We know this feeling of coldness amongst churches or even in a church. Yet, in John 17, you'll see Jesus praying this prayer that all of the believers who were yet to come, people like us in this room, he prayed that there would be a oneness to us. And not just in an individual church, but like in all the churches, all the different expressions and traditions and ways that we see people worshiping Jesus. But that's not usually what we see, is it? Usually we see a lack of unity. And so what we want to talk about today is where that unity comes from and some of the things that get in the way of that, that Paul addressed way back when to this little church in Galatia. So I'm going to read from Galatians 2, 1 through 10. And I'll just pray for us and what God wants to do among us before I start. So Jesus, would you help us hold on to that prayer that you prayed a long time ago, that vision you had for us to be one? And would you also at the same time, just even in this room right now, would you help our hearts just soften to things and places that have just kept us from being one? God, we just give you permission to put your finger on things, and would you just be so present? Would you be reachable to us this morning? Put your vision in front of us. We love you. Amen. Okay, so this is Galatians 2, 1 through 10. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Titus along also. I went in response to a revelation and meeting privately with those esteemed as leaders, I presented to them the gospel that I preach among the Gentiles. I wanted to be sure I was not running and yet had not been running my race in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised, even though he was Greek. This matter arose because some false believers had infiltrated our ranks to spy on the freedom we have in Christ Jesus and to make us slaves. We did not give in to them for a moment so that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you. As for those who are held in high esteem, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not show favoritism. They added nothing to my message. On the contrary, they recognized that I had been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been circumcised. For God, who was at work in Peter as an apostle to the circumcised, was also at work in me as an apostle to the Gentiles. James, Cephas, and John, those esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I had been eager to do all along. So basically this morning, we're just talking about circumcision. And I hope you're happy about this. We have a free circumcised clinic afterwards. So if you need that taken care of, we'll offer that today. I'm kidding. This is a really confusing passage at first sight, isn't it? You're wondering, what is he talking about? Why all these names and circumcision? Who are these false believers? So let me explain a little bit about what's happening and some history that we need to understand about what Paul is saying and doing. So here we are in the very early church. And so far, the majority of the church is right around Jerusalem, you know, where Jesus had been, and most of the people in the church are Jewish, which means that they come from this background in life that has this Jewish code of living, the Jewish law, you know, things like regulations on your diet, who to eat with, clothes you wear, rituals that you celebrate, and circumcision. They were commanded to be circumcised. And all of these rules basically work like a badge. It's a marker on their lives that set them apart as a people who belong to a certain identity. And this is true of all cultures and religions who have a code of living. It's a marker on their lives that set them apart. And so these early believers, these Jewish people, had this going on. And even though they were following Jesus now, and he was the center of their faith and life, they continued practicing many of their rituals and diet regulations, and they stayed circumcised, and they were circumcising their kids. I don't know how you undo circumcision. You need a transplant, I guess. golly. And because the stuff was just so ingrained in their life. I mean, the Jewish way of life is not just something you do on the weekend. It's like morning to evening type thing. It's how you live as a family, a community. And so here they are doing this. And it wasn't a big deal because they're all kind of doing this together. It's most of them were previously Jewish. But meanwhile, as this says, Paul is called to the Gentiles, which is just this word for people who have no background of being Jewish. And he's in what today is South Central Turkey, Galatia. And it's all these people who had previously been pagans or are pagans. And they're beginning to hear the message of Jesus. And these churches are happening. And here they come out of their pagan lifestyle and they start following Jesus. And they're obviously not following kosher diet. They're not keeping the Sabbath. They don't look anything like Jewish people. And in fact, when they hear about Jewish law and some of the things that Jewish people have to do, it freaks them out. They think circumcision is like mutilation. And it bugs them to think that maybe they would have to stop eating meals with their pagan friends, which is something Jewish people couldn't do. And so they want none of that. So there's these new waves of churches that are happening that are beginning to look externally different from these other churches that have previously been just Jewish people. As Paul mentions here, some dudes get wind of this. They hear that Paul's starting these churches and he's not making them do the Jewish things along with following Jesus. And we don't know exactly who these people were. Paul calls them false believers. And they sort of smuggle themselves into the churches and spy on what's going on. And then they start making these accusations and rumors. And they argue that Paul's gospel message was different than the real apostles' message. They claim that the real apostles, Peter, John, and James, were on these guys' side, and they agreed about circumcision, etc., that you had to have these things going on if you were going to follow Jesus. And they said that Paul was being rebellious, doing his own thing and departing from the true message. And not to mention, they go into these churches in Galatia, and they begin speaking to these little baby Christians who are just beginning to follow Jesus, and they say things like this: the person who taught you the Christian message didn't get it right. Paul gave you a half message. And that message he gave you about faith alone and Jesus alone through his grace alone wasn't the whole story. Because with that, you also need to be circumcised, and you also need to keep the Sabbath, and you also need to eat these certain foods and not eat these foods. And if you don't do those things, you won't be saved, and you won't be a member of God's people, and those markers and badges won't be on you. So the message that they needed to add to Jesus, Jesus plus these other things, in order to be a member of God's family, was unsettling to these new Christians. And consequently, a good number of these poor Galatians become somewhat obsessed with circumcision because they suddenly understand it as a hoop they have to jump through to be okay with Jesus. And that Paul, their leader, has mistaken them. And this is why Paul is writing this letter to them. He's trying to clear up these issues of rumors and confusion and the sense of obligation that's fallen among these people. And it's not just about this goofy circumcision, is it? Paul is speaking to something much bigger. He's calling these Galatians back to a unity and freedom that only following Jesus, Jesus being unhinged to anything else, can bring. And his command to them and for us is to be solely given to Jesus. And this unfolds a multitude of good things in us, as we'll talk about in a bit, for us personally, in our churches, and even outside the church. So let's talk about that. So not many of us here have a history or heritage of following Jewish law. We probably don't know what it's like to have a bar mitzvah. We don't follow kosher eating. We're not commanded to be circumcised. But we can relate to what Paul's talking about here because each of us do have a very ingrained natural way of living, even preferences in us, based on how our parents raised us, things they taught us, opinions that were just in our family growing up, places that we've lived that have influenced us, our jobs, people we hang out with. We have these things that are comfortable, familiar, ways that we do life. And for instance, I grew up in a house where my dad was and is a hunter. And in fact, I used to go hunting with him. Really, I mostly just slept in a tree and ate candy bars, but I think it still counts. And because hunting was a regular part of the year for us, we had guns in the house that my dad would teach us to use. And without asking for this to be a part of me, I grew up to be a person who is comfortable with guns being safely stored in a house. For other people, that's not normal at all. They haven't had the same experience as me, and maybe they've had bad experiences with guns as a child or an adult, and they're actually against gun ownership. Two very different normals right there, without even saying that one of us is right. It's just natural. We feel very differently. Or, for instance, my husband and I have a little sweet kiddo who's almost a year and a half, and I've found that in our short time of parenting, in the parenting world, there are some extreme normals, aren't they? You probably have experienced if you're a parent. In the realm of sleep, it's very normal for some families to put their child in a crib and sleep in a room that's very near the child's room. That works for many families, and it's normal and familiar and comfortable. Other families will choose to put their child in the bed with them. And for them, that's normal and comfortable, and they don't mind getting kicked in the chin. So there's two different normals right there. Neither of them are wrong, are they? But it's what feels comfortable. It's a preference. It's a way of living. It's been passed on. And when we talk cross-culturally, I mean, this stuff is all over. In America, we have an obsession with keeping things off the floor, don't we? Our beds are elevated on legs. We have chairs that we sit on in every room of the house. And if we drop food on the floor, even if the floor is relatively clean, and let's say a child goes to grab that piece of food to eat it, what do we tell that kid? Icky, no, don't eat food off the floor. That's gross. But honestly, in our house, we'll eat that food off the floor. But you go to a place like Japan, and where do you sleep? You sleep on a mattress that's pretty much right on the floor. You eat dinner at a table that's low to the ground, and you sit on the floor. Two totally different ways of living. Which one is right? Nothing wrong with sitting on the floor. Nothing wrong with sitting in a chair. All this to say, without even knowing it, we are full of our own normals, the natural way we do and see life. And you could even call them just our preferences. Each of us has them in this room. We're all very different in our preferences and the ways that we eat, see, and do things, our political views, how we approach life, let alone all the different churches in the Twin Ports, in North America, in the world. Think about how different we are, where we're coming from. So the Church of Jesus, then, is this incredibly diverse place because we are incredibly diverse. And these are exactly the ingredients behind the scenario that Paul's speaking to. And interestingly, he doesn't approach this mess by turning to the Galatians and saying, okay, I got to solve this problem, and what we're going to do is place a new rule on you. The new rule is, okay, let's just keep the peace, and you're going to just have to all get circumcised. He didn't do that. And he also didn't turn to the Jerusalem churches and say, okay, no new rule for you guys. Stop with the circumcision. Stop with the food preferences. Stop with the holidays you want to separate or celebrate. No more of this. He didn't add any more rules. He didn't put any restrictions on either group. But rather, because he's saying preferences aren't wrong, circumcision isn't wrong, being a Republican isn't wrong, a Democrat, all these different things, but he did say, and this is the big deal of the message, is that all of them, all of us, must be unequivocally surrendered to our true center and truth and life-giving source. Is it wrong to be circumcised? No. But nothing must get hinged with Jesus. If you prefer certain foods, fine. If you want to vote for Donald Trump, fine. If you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, fine. But here's the deal. Jesus alone, grace alone, faith in him alone. No side dishes, no addendum, no special hoop to jump through, no additional sign, no hobby, no club. The rule is, for your life to be connected with Jesus, it's Jesus. Like Paul says in verse 5, we were determined to preserve the truth of the message for you. Preferences, and we all have them, never trump Jesus. So here's what happens. When we hold our familiarities and preferences really dear to us, when they become necessities to our life and faith, even prerequisites or qualifiers for the gospel, any of those things plus Jesus always brings us into emotional and psychological turmoil. We lose our peace when we do this. So if you say something like, the right thing for my life is Jesus plus no swearing or no secular music, for instance, you will never have peace unless you live on the moon, because eventually you're going to hear your neighbor in their backyard swearing, or your daughter's going to want to buy the new Beyonce album. And what will happen is a wall of offense is going to rise up between you and these people that you're called to love, because they aren't living the same code of life that you have. They're not abiding by the same internal rule that you have. And so you lose your peace. You can't control what's going on outside of you. Or if you say, the big deal for me is Jesus plus wearing respectful clothing, you're not going to have peace, because eventually somebody like me is going to stand up on stage wearing pink pants, and it's going to mess with you. And it's going to get in the way of you connecting with people and Jesus. Or maybe you say, I need Jesus plus this certain political leader to get elected. You won't be peaceful. You'll be out of luck. Because politics come and go, and politicians all over the spectrum come and go. They rise and fall. And we will not have peace in our hearts with politicians reigning part of them. Paul says, I'm not budging an inch on the gospel. I can flex on so many things, what you eat or don't eat, what day of the week you worship on, how you do communion, what kind of music you like to listen to. But if you mix the gospel with any of your preferences, you're only going to have temporary peace. Jesus is the center of our orbit. He's the thing that holds us together. So how do you know when you've taken preferences too far? If you've bought into this myth, or even just this way of living, that your life must be coupled with something else to make it okay. This is how you'll know. You'll run into somebody who is a Christian, who says they're a Christian, and they're not abiding by that same rule. They're not, whatever it is, voting the same, sending their kids to the same schools, eating the same foods, whatever it might be. And when you see that happening in them, there will be a defensiveness that rises up in you. And you might even feel angry. You'll see maybe their bumper sticker or what they write on Facebook, and you just feel this come up inside of you. And you might even think to yourself, are they really a Christian? And then you'll know, whatever it is, whatever that thing is that you want to put on them to follow, to be okay, that you have wrongly mixed that with the message of Jesus. Jesus alone plus nothing. It's not only a loss of spiritual peace when we mix him, but it's psychological peace too. So when we notice these types of emotions, defensiveness, resistance towards others coming up inside of us, we can begin asking these questions. Why is this thing so important to me? And God, would you show me how you want to meet the deeper need, and would you be my source for peace? So when Jesus isn't that source that holds the community together and we find ourselves using preference to create the safety and comfort that Jesus wants to bring, instead of Jesus, what we end up doing in a church is that we gravitate towards other people with the same preferences. Have you guys experienced this before? Sometimes whole churches can end up being people who think the same way and have the same opinion just because it feels comfortable and safe and their preferences can be free to be out there and they're all doing it together. And you know when you walk into a church like that, because maybe you've done this, you go to visit a church on a Sunday morning and you get up and you put on the clothes that you normally wear and you're just being yourself and you walk in the doors and it's like one of those scenes from the movies where the jukebox screeches to a halt and everyone's like, and you know that there's just a sense of everyone's doing the way that they do things, and there's not a welcome for a difference here. But in reality, the reason that Paul didn't put a rule on the Galatians or the Jerusalem churches is because having a church full of different preferences is a really good thing, as long as they don't trump Jesus. Our diversity here, even in this room, you guys, is a really healthy thing. And we have freedom to be totally different in the clothes we wear, the cars we buy, the stores we choose to shop at, the hobbies we have. And here's why. When all sorts of preferences and differences get together in a room, people like us, and there's actually love that happens amongst the people, when unity abounds, it means that Jesus is alive and well in that community. Really, when unity is present among diversity, it means that Jesus is there. And here's a little story. Last fall, I watched, this was at a youth event, I watched this sweet 12-year-old boy get up on a stage and give a prophetic word to another person in the room. And when he was done giving the word, he was asked to pray for that kid. And he prayed this short prayer, and he ended the prayer with this: "That's all I got, God." And there was a freedom in that kid to not have the same preferences and to look alike like every other person in that room. He didn't use the word amen because it probably wasn't a word that he used in his normal life. And how many of us really even know what that word means? But we use it because we buy into a preference. And actually seeing that kid get up there and end his prayer with, "That's all I got, God," was a reminder to me and a lesson to me that I have bought into some of the kind of like herd preference of doing things that the room is doing, not necessarily because it's alive in my life with Jesus, but because I've just taken on a habit or a preference. I will raise my hand in worship, maybe because I'm not actually responding to Jesus, but I'm doing it because I feel like I should just do it. Or I'm using churchy language, not necessarily because I know what it means or it's genuine, but it's the words I feel like I should use. It's the preference of the community. So Paul is looking at the Galatians, and he's looking at the churches in Jerusalem, and he's saying there's room for you to be yourself here. Are we showing up to church as ourself? There's room for diversity in this room, with Jesus at the center. And when we let go of our preferences, we can also find that we can love the larger church even better too. Because that joke I told at the beginning of the Presbyterian and the Baptist and the Lutheran eating each other up in a cage, we know that is all too well true, don't we? And we can even list off the different preferences of different denominations. Catholic people look like this and do these things, and Lutherans do this, and Vineyard people do this. I mean, what do we say about ourselves? We use different language. We use different words than people in other churches. We have a different style than us in maybe the Catholic Church. There's a casualness to us, to our style of dress even. There's a musical difference, a preference in the Vineyard. What about the musical preferences of churches in Iceland or Uganda? Do you know that in the Russian Orthodox Church, they use bells in their worship? It's a preference of a church. And across the board, we see church folks who look totally different, don't we? People in robes, in blue jeans, people wearing fancy hats, huge cross necklaces. Our gatherings all look very different. At the end of last summer, I started meeting with a nun at St. Scholastica's monastery. And her name is Sister Barbara. She is awesome. She's been a nun for 60 years. She's almost 80. And to her, her normal life, the tradition that she's come from and all their preferences has filled her life with things like praying the rosary and priests and bishops and morning prayer and evening prayer and confession. And all of that is very foreign to me. The presence or the preference of this tradition that we're a part of doesn't include those things. And to be honest, I felt resistance in me when I started meeting with her. Because I found in myself the preference in me that I've been holding too tight to is sort of an anti-religion. That I've backed up against, away from traditions like that and almost scoffed at them, thinking that they're irrelevant or outdated. And so that I found this wall coming up between me and her. But here's what happened. As I sat with this 80-year-old woman and began sharing parts of my life and hearing parts of hers, I saw this stuff come out of her heart that was just bursting with Jesus. She exudes a love and kindness and generosity that I have seen in very few people. In fact, she's been one of these people in my life now that when I sit and talk with her, I actually feel like I'm sitting with Jesus. I feel so loved by Sister Barbara. And what got in the way was my misunderstood preference of another tradition, my weirdness towards Catholic people. But what we see happen when we do things like actually get to know someone from a different tradition or a different church, we see in a really good way God shattering the way that we look at church. We're kind of like, we become like the teenage kid who grew up in a church and went to youth group and grew up believing that the way his church did church was true and right. And the kid goes to college. And wouldn't you know, he starts meeting Christians from very different backgrounds. Christians who speak in tongues. Christians who wear jeans to church. Christians who have an occasional beer. Christians who love hymns. Christians who love rock music, heavy metal, whatever. Something happens to the teenager. He or she actually likes these people. He sees Jesus in them. He notices that they worship Jesus with everything they have, that they share their faith in a really real, warm way. And this is a fantastic problem for us. Because when we come to realize that what we thought was right, the right way to be a Christian, we find that it was no more than a reflection of our preferences sometimes. We recognize that God is at work in different ways with different people in different parts of the world. Our little box that we put church on, the way we do church, feeling like this is the only way, it just expands leaps and bounds. And our perception of God gets so much bigger. We no longer think that all Christians have to be alike. And when we experience this largeness of God at work, we are liberated from our own weird rules, aren't we? Because suddenly it humbles us. And we have to set down that thing that we thought was so important to make life okay. And then we experience what Paul talks about when you're not a slave to these preferences, the freedom of Jesus. Christians in Jerusalem and Galatia, Paul's saying, you're so different. You look so different, but it's beautiful. Learn to love each other in this. So do yourself a favor too. If you felt and do feel any sort of resistance like I have towards different traditions of people following Jesus, it might be good to actually visit and look for the work of Jesus in that church. Or even just sit and have coffee with your Lutheran friend or your Baptist friend or whomever and see Jesus at work in their life. And then here's a little good exercise we can do, even now, just like in our noggins or our hearts. If there's a particular church that you just find yourself criticizing or resisting, fill in this blank with the name of that church. Because Jesus loves that church. And it's good for us to recognize different callings and movements and to root for them and love them because they love the same Jesus as us. So lastly, this message of unity, this spirit of Jesus, his presence that comes and lives in us personally and in these communities, he grows this culture of unity that's so good, and it actually pours out beyond the church into the community that we live in and work in. And I'll be a little forward here with how he wants to pour that out. If you are a follower of Jesus, his unity is at work in you. It might be bumping up against things right now, or in all of us in general in our lives, but it's looking to be expressed in the world. He wants to unfurl that into the world because it's such a good thing. Are you trying to live out peace with everyone? Are you looking for ways to bring people together rather than divide? Do you see a fire starting amongst folks? Do you see harsh words being spoken, gossip circulating, heat spreading over different opinions or views or preferences? Put water on those fires. With your demeanor, your mood, the warmth of your words, be a presence of love in places. Choose to sit with the person in the lunchroom who's alienated and invite other people in. Send encouraging notes. Throw barbecues and invite all of them, even if they don't like each other. They will eventually if they all share a chicken. Pray for people who aren't getting along. Pray for churches who aren't getting along. Pray for neighborhoods, neighbors who don't like each other. Pray for them. Do you see controversy stirring? People making claims about other groups or leaders or organizations? Squelch that. Kindly speak up. When untrue things are being said, steer the conversation towards love and peace. Bring his peace into places where division is stirring. Dieter Zander was a church planter in San Francisco when he said this in an interview. He said, "When I moved to San Francisco, we lived on a street where our neighbors included an atheist Jewish family, a Buddhist family, an Irish Catholic family, a gay family, and a Hindu family. There was no sense of community. So we decided to become conduits of the kingdom by practicing the discipline of hospitality. We learn people's names and we use them. We introduce neighbors to each other, and something began to happen. My atheist Jewish neighbor came over and was in my kitchen one day, and he said, "You know, something has happened since you guys moved into the neighborhood. It's hard to describe, but it's like an enzyme has been added. Where there once was life, now there's life. What is that?" And I said, "That's the gospel of Jesus being lived in our lives. This is the gift we bring to our larger communities, our workplaces, our extended families, because of God's freedom in us. We know unity in community because we know Jesus, and we get to offer it to the world. Look for opportunities to be a conduit of his unity." So the foundation that we stand on in this room, in the larger church, is Jesus alone. But what we build on, when we build on that foundation with our music, our preferences, our clothes, the songs that we like to sing, the way we do communion, all those things, we can't have peace personally, we can't have peace amongst us, and we probably even resist bringing peace out. And we have to approach these preferences with humility, saying, "My way isn't the only way." So long as we have both embraced the gospel, so long as we have both trusted our life and death with Jesus, we've received his presence in our life, he's living right inside of us, we are brothers and sisters. And it doesn't matter if you wear or don't wear something on your head, or you take communion with one giant goblet or 7,000 little plastic cups. Can we see Jesus at work in the church, in that other church, in that other Christian, just as he is at work in this church, in us? There is a unique call to unity. And Paul is reminding us that it only comes from the most important thing, Jesus being our center. Why don't you guys stand up with me? Well, I feel like when I think about this message, I think the most lovely part of it is the strange thing that we really are a weird collection of people, and yet here comes the person of Jesus. And imagine this Ferris wheel, and he is the eye of the Ferris wheel. And here we all are on the outside, just filling these cars with all different kinds of people, and we're so different and weird, and yet here he is holding it all together, and we're orbiting around him. That's a lovely thought if you think of it. He makes us possible. He allows for love to happen here where there just, it doesn't normally happen. So let's just take a moment and just let his spirit of love and unity just, I guess, fall on us. Let him just amaze you with that thought that he is the one bringing us together. So Jesus, come do that. Would you show us just the power you have to hold this orbit in place? And God, I ask that you would fill this room with just an intense love for each other. It doesn't come out of just liking each other or being similar to each other, but because there is an agent and a power, an enzyme at work among us. It just brings a supernatural love. Just fill us with that love, Jesus. And as he does that, let's just be as soft as we can be with him. I know that these preferences we hold, sometimes we hold them so tight, they're so important to us. But allow him just so gently to put his finger on anything that we're just holding on to, that we tend to expect all of Christianity to hold on to. Whatever it might be for you, just let Jesus gently do that. He's okay with our preferences too, but he wants to just come before that. Restore your peace. I was thinking and praying earlier, and I've wondered if there's a number of us here who have experienced the pressure of other people's preferences in our life. Maybe in our families, or maybe past churches even. And maybe you're physically away from those places now, but you might still feel those pressures on your life. You feel guilt when you're not doing that thing, or going to that place, or whatever it might be. And it's still sort of like hinged onto your life with Jesus. We would really love to pray for you this morning and see Jesus just bring some freedom to you in that place. And even just hear from him that you can be free from that. That's really who you need to hear that from. So actually, could the ministry team come forward? Thank you. As you're just sensing those things, if like as God's putting his finger on just things that he would like you to surrender, those pressures that you might be feeling, let's just begin getting prayer and letting God loosen those places up and rearrange our hearts. And there's a couple more things. Some of us know that we are judging others. We just feel criticism and resistant when we're around Christians who don't look like us. And if God has just softened your heart a little bit this morning and you sense that there's just a better way with his love, and we want to pray for that too. And then lastly, this is just a thought that popped in my mind during worship. I felt like there might be somebody here who is going through a miscarriage. And we really want to go through that with you and grieve that with you and sort of hold you up with Jesus. And so if that really painful experience is happening in your life, it can be hard to just march down here, but you can come to the side and grab somebody. We want to pray with you and help support you through that. Jesus has good things for you, and he wants to bring some just peace and healing to your life as you experience that pain. And that goes for any kind of pain, honestly, that's happening here. Jesus wants to meet all of us. So please do come get prayer and allow his love and his unity to just keep at it in here. Thank you so much.